Chapter 2. Not a date, Steve tells himself. Tony didn't frame it as such, and in his current mood of being open about uncomfortable things, he would have definitely spelled it out, if that's what he wanted it to be. That doesn't mean that the intention isn't there or the hope of it. Also, Tony fixed his hair and changed his clothes. He's not dressed up, there's no designer jackets today, but he switched to a slightly nicer band shirt with a long-sleeved tee underneath, plus jeans that don't have oil stains on them. It's deceptively minimal effort, though it has Steve's chest clenching at the sense of near-nakedness permeating off of Tony. No, but you do understand the purpose of the World Council, Tony's saying. They're eating pizza at an outdoor table, and Tony's fingers glisten with cheesy grease when he gestures. They have made and will make stupid decisions, but at the core of it is the necessity of decisions being made at all by authority to an end goal. Honestly, I'm just surprised none of us have been arrested for anything yet, Steve replies. At the very least, someone should have smacked me for S.H.I.E.L.D. That is curious, Tony agrees. I wonder if Fury had a hand in that. What's your game plan if that happens? If what happens? If we get in someone's spotlight and I can't throw money at them to make them go away, what do you think we should do? An exit plan, you mean? Huh. Tony sounds intrigued. You've thought about it. Worst case scenario, we split. Priority should be on individual safety, no question. From there, regroup once it's possible, but that's assuming that, assuming what? Assuming that everyone wants to regroup, Steve says with a wince. The Tesseract brought us together the first time, the Scepter the second, now we're moving by momentum. But I feel like if the team were to take a hard enough hit, it could stick. Tony nods. It would take something else, just as huge, to bring us back together, instead of the team being reason enough in itself. Makes sense. Why are you looking so green? I've thought the same thing. It's cold. Or realistic. I don't like thinking that way, Steve says tersely. Of course you don't. Your mister will do it together, even if you don't have a plan to back that up. The words could cut, but the delivery is warm, affectionate. A part of me thinks it would be better if I did think like that, especially after what happened with S.H.I.E.L.D., Steve says. What was that like? What? S.H.I.E.L.D., Tony says. When you realize that people who should have been your allies were... not. Steve stares at him. Tony has an elbow on the table, his head resting on the loosed fist that's propped up. Here's a man in good company, relaxed and alert and interested. His focus is entirely on Steve, who should feel more self-conscious about it. Not fun, Steve says. Not fun like they got your order wrong at the restaurant, not fun, or not fun like one of your workmates is a rage monster who's destroying a city, not fun. You need a more accurate scale. Sorry. Tony's smile is small, though no less genuine. Just working with what I have. Disappointing. Me? Finding out the people I'd counted on were two-faced shitheads. It was disappointing. Oh, ho, ho. Tony grabs another pizza from the box, though his eyes never leave Steve's face. Keep going. It spills out fast and easy. Steve's anger at himself for not seeing it until it was almost too late. The small hints he should have picked up, but it chalked up to his also having to adjust to the 21st century. Tony asks if Steve was close with any of them besides Natasha, and Steve admits that no, he wasn't. Maybe his subconscious knew something was wrong, because he'd reached out for friendship beyond S.H.I.E.L.D. instead of within. Steve's worked most of this out with Natasha and Sam, but that was back when the betrayal still burned and Steve's priorities aimed forward instead of back. There's freshness in talking about it now, especially with Tony's poking at new angles and asking different questions. You believe in the best in people, Tony says. The problem is not everyone gets with the program. Sometimes I wonder if I could have figured it out if I had made the effort to get to know them better. Fury didn't know, so how could you? Oh, right. The expectations you place on yourself are even more impossible than the expectations you place on others. You have great appreciation for my flaws, Steve says, smiling when Tony does. I think Natasha took it harder than I did, all things considered. Shield was her touchstone for a long time. That said, I think she was happy to get out, try something different. Try a gamma radiation specialist, Tony says. Too soon? Of all my mistakes, that might be my worst one. Why would that be your... Oh, shit. You tried to get them together, too. Tony laughs when Steve grimaces. What was that even like? I mean, Bruce would just throw things at me to get me to shut up, but Natasha... I wasn't going to talk to Nat about it, Steve exclaims. I just offered Bruce some friendly advice. What, like don't step on her feet? You know, I still try to picture sometimes what that would have been like if Bruce was still around and they gave it a shot. Dating in the team, holy shit, that would have been something. Steve keeps his expression bland, even as his eyes jump to Tony sharply. He can do that because Tony's preoccupied with another slice of pizza and staring off to the side, probably doing the literal imagining right at this moment. That's also interesting, Tony says, in the sense that, of course, I would encourage Bruce. I'm all about the boundary testing experiments, but you... I am genuinely surprised you'd do a little push-push. Right, because I'm the boring one. Steve, you are plenty of things, but boring is not one of them. Glad to hear it. Would you consider it yourself? As the answer rises out of Steve, so does a sense of dread. Consider what? Dating within the team. Tony's voice barely changes, still tinged with the same light curiosity it's had throughout. But Steve's watchful, taking note of when Tony shifts away from eye contact and especially good tell, when he keeps his hands busy, in this case with the pizza and the straw of his drink. Natasha and I aren't like that, or Sam either. He's just... Steve realizes his mistake the moment he says Sam's name, because now he's got to list everyone in the team. But then Tony cuts in blessedly with an amused yet impatient... I just mean in theory, not for anyone specific. We could recruit more people, and there could be someone who'd... Well, you never know, right? Steve doesn't know how to entangle this. Tony's on a New Year's resolution kick sans the New Year, and a subsection of said resolution seems to involve his attempts to... What? Make himself interesting and agreeable for Steve's sake? But this isn't Tony being manipulative. At least it doesn't feel like that. Tony isn't putting on a front for the sake of a specific goal. There may be a goal, but the efforts are genuine. The interest is genuine. I guess I haven't thought that far ahead, Steve manages to say. Yeah, I hear you. Tony leans back, stretching his arms. You have your position as team leader to consider, too. It's strange to be on the receiving end of this. Even after getting the serum, Steve still thinks of himself as that little guy who's only ever known rejection, both the kind and unkind type, which isn't the whole story because he has had to relearn the ropes post-serum, along with the brand new skills of gently nudging unwanted interest away. But that post-serum interest has always come from strangers, or acquaintances at most, some really good acquaintances. A few he'd even given a shot with on good faith, but none of them were people Steve's gone into battle with, pulled out from wreckage, or thought dead more than once. None of them were anything like Tony Stark, either. Steve wouldn't know how to date Tony, even if he wanted to. Steve reminds himself that whatever Tony's feeling is perfectly understandable, and Tony's not done a single thing wrong with it. When people spend time together, things happen, even between personalities that may not look compatible at first glance. Steve was in the Army. He knows well enough that proximity encourages attachment. Steve needs to be kind. The more so now that Tony's like this, cleaving pieces of himself in offering, and not only to Steve, but the others as well. But he also needs to be honest. "There is that," Steve starts. "But I believe it wouldn't be that much of an issue if I really wanted to be with someone." "You'd make it work? Come hell or high water?" "Yeah, that sounds about right. But only if the person's worth it, I suppose." Tony's playing with a napkin now, folding and unfolding the corners. Steve's not sure Tony even realizes he's doing it. And there hasn't been anyone like that since. The Lady Carter, naturally, obviously. There's no one like her in the whole world. Steve doesn't feel relieved. "I met her a couple of times," Tony says, which causes a minor explosion at the back of Steve's head as he tries to picture it. Peggy. Wonderful, amazing Peggy, existing in the same space as rapscallion prodigy Tony Stark. "My mom knew her," Tony continues. "Or she knew my mom, I guess would be more accurate. Howard wasn't. I think they had a falling out, but I didn't know the details. I could tell that there was something epic about her, but had no idea. Or maybe I was just too much of a baby idiot to put the effort of figuring it out." Icy fear grips Steve's chest. He knows how precious this is, that Tony's able to talk so freely, when a few weeks ago this wouldn't have hit the top 50 list of most improbable things that Steve could have imagined of the new century. Tony's reaching out, not just to Steve, but to others as well. And if Steve is to actually be a good person he claims to be, he should at least try to reciprocate. The fear stays, thickens. Steve opens his mouth anyway. "There's something I need to tell you," he says, "about your parents." Tony's eyes are guileless. "Okay?" Steve might have fucked it up. The thing is, he'd be okay with fucking it up if he'd only fucked up this single day, the single lunch, and not the entirety of his relationship with Tony. Tony's quiet after. The food's gone, so Steve suggests they head back. Tony says he's fine with that, so they go. In the car, Tony asks a few questions that Steve does his best to answer, but other than that, he's silent, still not thrumming anymore. They part ways once they get home, Tony understandably needing to look into the post-SHIELD info drop by himself. A few hours later, Steve finds out from Friday that Tony's left the compound entirely. He took one of the suits, didn't say where he was going, but promised to keep them updated once he gets there. At the end of the day, Tony sends a group email that he's in Malibu to check on some things and that they're to let him know if they need him for anything. Steve composes and discards various emails. They sound trite no matter how much he works on them, and decides that anything he can say should be said when Tony gets back. But Tony's gone for over a week, long enough that the rest of the Avengers catch wind of a mission, leave for it, and return. It's a relatively small field trip involving the breaking up of an illegal arms exchange, a useful field exercise for their newest members, but not big enough to call Tony in. They get back a little bruised, but having learned a few things, which is good. Steve's good at compartmentalizing, so the mission passes without incident. He only really parses how anxious he is about the matter when Tony finally drops a message in the team inbox that he'll be back in time for the mission's postmortem if they want to keep him in the loop. The next day, Steve has the most efficient shower possible after his morning run and comes down to the common area where Sam and Vision are watching TV. "I saw Tony's car," Steve says. "He come in yet?" "Yeah, he just went up. Sam says. Why do they keep getting my bad side? I thought you said you don't have a bad side, Vision says. It's not a bad side, per se, Sam says, while Steve belatedly registers that they're watching a news report about the Avengers' latest public sighting. But it's slightly less flattering than my best side. Hazard of the job, I've been told, Vision says. Steve perches on the arm of the couch, half paying attention, while Sam and Vision debate the nature of celebrity attached to being an Avenger. If Tony went up instead of down, that probably means he's in his quarters, and Steve can't exactly bug him while he's there. Or he could. Maybe that's okay now. The decision is taken out of his hands when Tony appears around the corner. He's frowning, but he's also tapping away at his phone, so it could mean anything. Overall, he looks fine and put together. But that could mean anything, too. Hey, Steve says. Tony looks up. Oh, hey. A distracted smile is still a smile, and one of the knots in Steve's shoulders immediately unwinds. You okay? Steve says. Yeah, Tony says slowly. For a second or two, his throat works silently, accompanied by a visible and visibly awful effort to control his facial expression. I went to visit ye old Stark archives. Thought I might find... No, Steve says quickly. You don't have to say anything. It's kind of not like this. Urgency propels Steve, dropping him from his seat to approach Tony, his voice low so he knows this is meant only for him. I know you're making a point with all the sharing, and I appreciate it, I really do, but this is new, and it's hurting you. Keep that, okay? Keep it until you're ready, and I'll be there to listen when you are. Tony rolls his eyes. The whole point is that I can't tell when I'm ready. Then let me make the call on this one. How about that? There's an argument on Tony's lips. Steve can see it gathering together like a storm up until Tony gives in, relaxing. Okay, he says. I'll take that for now. All right. Steve hovers for a second, then gives in as well, throwing his arms around Tony for a hug. Oh, okay, Tony says, muffled and surprised. While Steve squeezes, Tony brings his hands up awkwardly, patting Steve's back. He's so solid in Steve's arms, which is appropriate because sometimes Tony seems more a real person than Steve's ever been. Have they ever done this? Steve thinks they haven't. Not even with all the world and life-saving they've accomplished over the years. Maybe it's because Tony's always in a suit when they're out on the field together, but that's not an excuse. Steve's aware of the peril in here. When he draws back, he catches a half second of Tony's eyes, half shut and wistful, before that shuddered away. But Steve doesn't care about that. Tony can use the memory of this any way he wants, as long as he also knows how glad Steve is that he's here and they're talking and they're friends. Steve exhales slowly and shrugs when Tony frowns at him. I was afraid you'd be mad at me. I thought we were not going to talk about this now, Tony says, amused. That's right. So, Tony says, am I late for the meeting or what? Just waiting for Natasha, Steve says. But afterward, do you want to, are you doing anything? I'm stealing your bud, actually. Stealing my... Steve turns on his heel, following Tony's gesture over his shoulder. Sam, though still watching TV, has raised a hand. If I have a billionaire for a teammate, he says, I'm going to take advantage of that. I'm letting him drive my car, Tony says, plus whatever cars I have at the tower, within reason. I am all right with that, Sam says. Steve just manages to stop himself from saying, without me? Because that would have been petulant and embarrassing, and Sam's already making that face that warns of a great deal of shit-talking in the near future. Don't worry, Tony says, patting Steve's shoulder. I'll bring him back in one piece. For the next few days, the universe conspires against Steve. It shouldn't be difficult to get Tony to himself for a little while. maybe an hour or two. But things pop up one after another for Tony, then Steve, then both of them, then back again. Although they do see each other around, there are always others around as well, or the conversation has to be cut short. On one hand, there's no rush to catch Tony by himself and thus get a better handle on how he's doing. He's shaken but fine and is understandably still processing. On the other hand, Steve has had the worst luck with regards to timing and lost chances, and there's always the possibility that another potential apocalypse is just around the corner. So it would be just swell if Steve could get this done before anything of that sort happens. "How about this weekend?" Steve says, the one time he manages to snag Tony before the man's heading out for a meeting with Hill. "What are your plans for the weekend?" "Wanda wants to visit Clint," Tony says. "I said I'd take her." "You're going to Clint's? Can I come?" "I don't know. Can you?" "Actually, I can't answer that. You gotta ask Clint. He gets touchy about people crashing uninvited. You know how it is." But Steve does get Clint's go-ahead. So on Saturday, they take the second Quinjet out to Clint's farmstead. Steve's been there a handful of times, but this is the first that he's going without Natasha. The flight is subdued, Steve chiming in only occasionally while Tony and Wanda share the vaguest, least baggage stories of their childhoods. Once there, Clint is a grumbly but welcoming host, and through the late afternoon, he and Tony wander the grounds together, talking about who knows what. As for Steve, he stays on the porch, a paperback and sketchbook for company. Wanda eventually joins him, bringing a tray of lemonade and snacks, courtesy of the Barton kitchen. "I like to be reminded that there are places like this in the world," she says this matter-of-factly, as though it doesn't occur to her to be pitied for it. "Keeps things in perspective." "I know what you mean," Steve says. That night, Steve asks Tony to join him up on the roof. "What, stargazing?" Tony says, his disgust only half-mocking. Not so much a fan of space, since finding out there are overpowered aliens out there who want to destroy us. "There are plenty of non-aliens who want to destroy us right here, too. You can't hold that against Earth." "I'll hold whatever grudges I want, Rogers." Tony follows him anyway. It's a warm night, but Steve brings two sets of blankets, just in case. Natasha showed him the hangout spot the second time they came here. It's just over the second guest room and sturdy, exactly for this purpose, and Steve now guides Tony across the slates to sit down. "I am this close to talking Clint into letting me upgrade his equipment." Tony takes some time to make himself comfortable, turning left and right and making a face all the while. Nothing fancy, because I know that would defeat the purpose. But some of the stuff he has lying around here is almost as old as you. And just as dependable. "I am not going to answer that," Tony finally settles, half lying down with his legs propped up at an angle, feet braced against the eaves. Steve sits upright, the view just as magnificent this way than if he were on his back. Pitch black save the little pockets of light from the other farmsteads and distant towns. And stars all the way to forever. Sure, Steve's a city guy, but he can appreciate the safety, or the illusion of safety, within this vastness Clint's claimed for himself. "I know two illegal ways to find Bucky," Tony says, "but, you know, illegal." "Let's not." "Ha! You're only saying that because I'd be involved." "He doesn't want to be found yet," Steve says firmly. "I understand that, though even if I wish it weren't so." "That's got to take willpower." "I do have some. It's just..." Steve steals a glance at Tony. He doesn't seem on edge or angry. Tony's the one who brought Bucky up anyway. "I hate not knowing, and I hate that I can't be there for him. I'd already lost him twice, and I didn't even..." "I should have kept at it. Found him before they finished what they were doing to him." Tony doesn't say anything. Steve can almost hear the usual replies. Don't blame yourself. If wishes were horses, there's no changing the past. But that's just Steve's brain clacking along its familiar paths, round and round in circles, waiting for a new sign to jump tracks. Steve used to be better at waiting. Sometimes I think it would be better if he doesn't get any of his memories back, Steve says. It'd kill him to know, to really know, what they made him do. I'm sorry, are you okay? It's fine, Tony says. All right, no, it's not fine, but... No buts. You were talking about Barnes. He's not going to show up right now. That'd be neat, though, wouldn't it? Steve pointedly doesn't reply. It's just... Tony pauses, gathering himself. There are two things going on in my brain right now. That your friend is out there needing help, and that Hydra had my parents killed. Every so often, I need to remind myself that they're connected, and I can't hold on to it. Then maybe you shouldn't. There are so many things I hated about my dad, and the thing I hated him for the most wasn't even his fault. Tony's eyes shift away from the star-filled night sky, settling on Steve's face instead. Even now, Tony's wary about talking to Steve about Howard. Though the days have long since passed that Steve might have tried to measure Tony against memories of a man he didn't know very well. Pulls the rug out from under you, Steve says. Yeah, and it's weird, because, like, I'd already been thinking about him a lot lately. Him and my mom, but mostly him. And how much I don't want to be him. He was good at the big things. Creating, looking to the future. Sure, I give him that. But he was lousy at the small things. At being a decent human being up close, I want to do better. I think you're doing pretty damn good. No, it's... Tony brings his hands up to his chin, drumming his fingers together, as though itching for a keyboard. I know why it didn't work out with Pepper. She never asked for this, for Iron Man, the Avengers, all of it. She doesn't understand why we do what we do, and by God, she shouldn't have to. And it's not just that, it's also me. I didn't do enough. Wasn't there enough. Tony pauses, steadying himself, and it's here that Steve realizes what's going on. If I ever try again with someone, I'd do better, Tony says. I am better. Is it possible to feel sad and proud at the same time? I think you'd make someone very happy, Steve says quietly. Thanks. Tony's gaze has moved away again. He's staring up at the sky, almost as though daring it to blink first. Steve finds himself checking Tony's chest just to make sure that he's breathing. That means a lot. Does it? Steve knows he hasn't done anything to lead Tony on, but as Tony's body stays tense next to him, that sour feeling in the pit of Steve's stomach seems a lot like guilt, which isn't fair. Steve knows what Tony's doing. He's putting himself out there, doing the soft sell. Steve had no idea Tony had this in him, and he almost wishes he were interested in him because it's beautiful. You told me something once, Steve says. We were here, actually. Over there, he points. You said that the reason we fight is to end the fight. Sure, I remember. I hated you for saying that. Steve laughs shakily. You were right on the money, and you didn't even know. When Wanda mind whammied us, I saw Peggy, but Peggy as she was back then, as though it was the end of the war, but I knew it wasn't real, and that it was a taunt of what I could never have. It would never end, and I didn't want it to end because I don't have anything else anymore. Steve, I don't know who I am without the fight. There it is. Steve scrubbed raw and cold despite the blanket. He wants to take it back, but it's done. It's out there, and now Tony knows that Steve's not someone that anyone can hang expectations on. Tony puts his hand on Steve's. It's not hand-holding, but a curl of his fingers over Steve's wrist. I'm here. I heard you. It doesn't solve anything or offer any answers, but Steve is warmed by it anyway. That sucks, Tony says. Yeah, Steve says. Thank goodness they're not sharing a bed this visit. That one time was bad enough, and not only because Tony's feet had been cold where they'd poked at Steve's calves.